Hi, this is Glenn Rawson. One of the most powerful ways to share history and heritage is by the telling of stories. We began sharing inspiring stories nearly 30 years ago. Each of those stories is true and was intended to inspire and strengthen faith. Over the years, those stories have reached millions around the world. This podcast is for you to listen, learn, and enjoy. Hello, my friends, and welcome tonight. I hope everything's wired up and working the way that it should be. My name's Glenn Rawson, and I'm here tonight to tell stories and hopefully for you to do you some good. I hope and pray that an influence and a power greater than you and me will be here tonight to help us. The first story tonight, this was years ago when our children were very small. We went across the state on some kind of a school field trip or something, and we left the Boise area and were coming across the freeway going towards Interstate 15 and back to Blackfoot. The first 130 miles of our trip had been a rainstorm, but as we continued on to the east, we outran the rain and reached the leading edge of the storm. There, we encountered some pretty strong crosswinds blowing across the freeway. Now, these are the kinds of winds, as you can appreciate, that make driving a minivan broadside to the wind rather challenging. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say this, but I have a hard time calling it a minivan. To us in those days, and we've long since outgrown that, it was a Mormon attack wagon. Well, at any rate, one of the children or something momentarily distracted me, and I turned around to see what it was. And when I looked back, a huge tumbleweed came out of nowhere and landed on the highway right in front of me. There was no way I could miss that thing. I mean, boom, tumbleweed went everywhere. Now, that van is long since gone, but I'm sure that there are pieces of tumbleweed still in a hidden mechanical corner somewhere. I looked down the highway, and there were dozens of tumbleweeds rolling and bouncing across the freeway. It looked like the high desert version of a coastal hurricane. If you looked off to the right, out across the desert, it looked like the desert floor was alive and dancing. Tumbleweeds were rolling and bouncing everywhere, blowing up choking clouds of dust. I watched those tumbleweeds come rolling across the desert. The wind would pick them up and sail them over the fence and across the freeway, and some of them would hit the fence and just, boom, pile in like sheep, one on top of another. As I saw that interesting scene, my mind was called back to the days when I was just a pup on the ranch. And I remember tumbleweeds, that they were such a pain. They were useless for grazing by livestock. They were a weed that choked out everything else. And not only that, they would reach ripened maturity, form into those round balls, and then for some strange reason unique to that species of plant, they would dry out and snap off right at the ground line, right at the root line, leaving the root in the ground to come back the following year and the great big inflorescence to blow across the farm or the ranch or the desert and lodge in our ditches and in our fences, thus necessitating on a regular basis that we had to clean the fences and we had to burn the ditches to get rid of the tumbleweeds. Now you can see where I'm going with this. Don't we live in a tumbleweed world? It seems that there are individuals, groups, societies, nations as a whole that are letting go of the values that root them in place and ensure their safety. Too many people today are letting go of their gospel roots, and they are being blown about with every wind of fashion, with every wind of fad, opinion, especially political opinions. Whichever way the wind blows, they go back and forth and back and forth. And you know what happens to tumbleweeds as they continue to blow. They break off a piece here and a piece there, and people are no different, continually blown about until spiritually they are no more. My dear friends, the thrill of rolling, as it were, morally free may be a fun frolic for a time, but it will always be a short-lived tragedy. If we as a people do not sink our roots deep and return to God and stand anchored in place, we will be blown about with every wind of doctrine until we are destroyed. God bids us stand in holy places, or build on the foundation of Christ, or sink your roots deep and be anchored in place. Now, look at the times we live in. Look at the road ahead of us. Are you firmly anchored in place by your covenants and your hope in Christ? Are you standing firm against all that's happening around you today? If you're not, I invite you to come back and to do so. Come unto Christ, Moroni 10. Come unto Christ and be rooted and grounded in Him. Then you will learn in a deeper way about roots and branches and what they mean in that day that He comes. As it grows late in the season and everything around us ripens, meaning spiritually speaking in these last days, what will you be? A drifting tumbleweed or a fruitful tree? That story is left over from the other day when I didn't get a chance to tell it. So sorry if I sound a little preachy, but that's an old story. Okay, now this next story, talk about true and faithful. Talk about something that just thrills your soul. This story is that one. The material for this story was given to me by Ida Card Ashby. I think I got that right. Now, let me begin with something that you're familiar with. It was Sunday afternoon, September 16th, 1877. Not that you're familiar with that by memory, because if you remember that and you're watching me, oh baby. No, the quote. It was September 16th, 1877, in the New Tabernacle in Salt Lake City. President Wilford Woodruff stood up and began to speak, and near the close of his address in conference, he made this famous quote, which we have referred to in this church over and over and over. Quoting, "I will here say before closing that 2 weeks before I left St. George, President Woodruff, the spirits of the dead gathered around me, wanting to know why we did not redeem them. Said they, 'You have had the use of the endowment house for a number of years, and yet nothing has ever been done for us. We laid the foundation of the government you now enjoy, and we never apostatized from it. But we remained true to it, and were faithful to God.' Then President Woodruff continues, 'These were the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and they waited on me for 2 days and two nights. I thought it very singular that notwithstanding so much work had been done, and yet nothing had ever been done for them. The thought never entered my heart from the fact, I suppose, that heretofore our minds were reaching after our more immediate friends and relatives.' He then said, 'I went straightway into the baptismal font and called upon Brother McAllister to baptize me for the signers of the Declaration of Independence and 50 other eminent men, making 100 in all, including John Wesley, Columbus, and others. I then baptized him for every president of the United States except three, and when their cause is just, somebody will do the work for them.'" End of quote. I think most of us have heard that story about the signers of the Declaration, the founding fathers appearing to President Woodruff in the St. George Temple, right? Well, Here's the rest of that story, which to me just gives me chills. This is what Ida shared with me. There's a sequel here. Fast forward now. It was November 16th, 1928. November 16th, 1928. Zina Young Card, the daughter of Brigham Young, wrote a letter from her hospital bed, as I understand it, in Salt Lake City. She was a very elderly woman, wrote a letter to friends back home in Cardston, Alberta, Canada. Grandma Zina, or Aunt Zina, as she signs it in the letter, mentions the tragic news that she had heard had happened there in Cardston of those who had lost loved ones in her hometown. And then she said, makes reference that as she pondered why these loved ones were taken so untimely, she then, in the letter, began to recount an experience with President Wilford Woodruff just hours after the dedication of the Logan Temple in May 1884. Evidently, they had dedicated the Logan Temple. They had then boarded the train and were now headed south into Salt Lake City and back home. This is May 1884 that she's making reference to. She says, speaking of that experience, President Wilford Woodruff sat by himself. As I came along in the car when we were returning home, meaning the train car, when we were returning home to Salt Lake, and motioned for me to sit down by him, I did so. We talked of the glorious times we had in the temple and rejoiced that another temple was ready to carry on the great work for the living and the dead. His conversation led to his story in St. George, the one I just referred to, where he had so many distinguished and leading people's work done. Yes, yes, he said, I received the great manifestations of my life while there, meaning in St. George. And then it seems in the letter that President Woodruff just shifted. She says in her letter, you and your mother know something of the plans for my Briggy boy, he called him. Briggy boy was Wilford Woodruff's son, Brigham Young Woodruff. When he was drowned, he was to be my secretary and assistant in the historian's office, and I did need him too, President Woodruff said. He graduated in the best of trim for this work. He is making reference to Brigham Young Woodruff, who passed away at the tender age of 20 in 1877 and is buried in Smithfield, Cache County, Utah. And he's making reference to the fact of how much he missed that boy and how much he mourned for him. President Woodruff at that time, in September of 1877, was in St. George when his son died. He said, continuing the quote with her, quoting him, well, he said, the trial seemed too hard to bear. As I was in St. George, I could not go home to comfort anybody, so I just went up into the mountains among the Indians, where I fasted and prayed for strength to bear my sorrow, and to plead with the Lord to know why this had been sent to me. As I sat with my hands covering my face, I felt a spirit of peace, and looking up, I saw Brother Brigham in a cloud of light standing some distance from the ground. This is President Brigham Young appearing in vision. Oh, how beautiful and noble he looked. I sprang to my feet and stretched out my arms to him, saying, Brother Brigham, you have come for me. He smiled and answered, no, you have a great mission yet to perform on the earth. I came in answer to your prayers and to comfort you. Your Brigham had another mission to perform of considerable importance. Do you recall, Brother Brigham said, the great work you have done and have done for your kindred dead, and the great men of the earth who have been done for in the temple of the Lord. And then Brigham Young continued. He, meaning President Woodruff's son, he is preaching to them and is the one to carry this great message of salvation to those who have and will receive the gospel in the spirit world. President Woodruff said, how glorious this message was to me. President Woodruff, I asked, what should I tell the saints? Brother Brigham spoke with power, quote, tell them to wake up and live the gospel in their daily lives. We are so busy here working for you. And then President Woodruff said, he smiled and seemed to enter into the cloud of light. Oh, how I humbled myself to the very earth, President Woodruff said, and praised God that I had a son worthy to do such a glorious work. Sister, President Woodruff talking to Zina, sister, I have never mourned one moment since for my boy. End of quote. This story, which you are all familiar with, is meant to be a gentle reminder of what matters most. Spencer was very ill, and yet he could not afford to be. His work was so important, and there was so much to do, and he was so needed, but he was too sick. A series of heart attacks had brought him down and confined him to his bed. He went from a fulfilling, frantic, hectic pace of good work to a monotonous humdrum at home. After nearly 2 months of being confined in home, he began to look for a change of scenery. The idea occurred to him that he would return to his native Arizona, his hometown, and there he would convalesce. Well, he borrowed a camp trailer, went out on the desert under some pine trees, not too far from the home of a friend, and there he began the recuperative time in solitude. And I understand that. The solitude, the comfort, the quiet of nature. It was heavenly and therapeutic for his soul, and he grew stronger. Each day, the people in the house would come down to check on him. Early one morning, those who had charge over him came to the trailer and discovered the trailer and his bed empty, thinking perhaps that he may have gone for a walk and they would be back by breakfast. They were not terribly concerned. But when he did not come back by 10 o'clock that morning, they became alarmed and mounted a search looking for him. They finally found him miles away, sitting under a pine tree. As they approached, they could see that his eyes were closed and a book was lying open next to him. They drew closer, and still he did not open his eyes. Fearing the worst, they ran up to him, and as they did, his eyes slowly opened, and to their surprise, tears were coursing down his wrinkled cheeks. The book that was open beside him was the Bible. To their worried questions, he said, 5 years ago today, I was called to be an apostle of the Lord Jesus Christ, and I just wanted to spend the day with him, whose witness I am. Spencer was Spencer W. Kimball, whose love for the Lord and his fellow man lingers still with tenderness in the hearts and memories of those who knew and loved him so much. My dear friends, true and faithful is not a drudgery. Sometimes we look at it as nail-biting. I think that's quoting Elder Maxwell. nail-biting, grinding existence enduring to the end. Maybe that's a warped perspective. Consider, after we're done here tonight, just sitting down in a quiet place with your Book of Mormon and Third Nephi or the New Testament and spending another hour just you and him.
Thank you for listening. Many of the stories you heard today have been published and are archived at glennrossinstories.com. If you would like more information, you can communicate with us there. We will be back again with another podcast next week.